Welcome back to Real Kipper and Bourne. I am Justin Bourne. We are not with Nick Kyprios today. Kip somewhere doing something Washington Capitals related. I am joined by Sammy McKee. Sammy, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. I'm sitting in a weird spot.
How's it feel? It's weird over there.
Literally never sat here before.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
No, it's fine. Kipper's doing one of the things like I'm the most jealous of like NHL guys for.
Yeah.
Like alumni stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like they, I know all sports do it and like it's a big thing for all the sports, but it just feels like the hockey guys, I don't know, they're the alumni of it. Yeah. It's just going to hang out with the old guys that you want to cup with. I mean, this is, doesn't sound much better than that.
And it's always like, yeah, they flew us out and we played some golf course and they took us to a steakhouse and we had to sign a couple autographs. And it's like
yeah, probably.
Take
probably.
Friday off. This hour of Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365. This is a reminder to get texts into us in the back half of the hour. We are going to respond to those. You can text 590-590. Exciting new feature coming soon. We're going to take some calls as well, which is going to be a lot of fun.
So, I mean, it's not, we're not doing it quite yet. And the cat, I guess, is out of the bag here now. But yeah, like we'll do that more in the Leafs hour.
Yeah.
But we're going to have some contributions. It won't be live because we can't trust you dopes, but.
No. Not at all.
There'll be some answering machine involved. A good old-fashioned answering machine.
I know. It's pretty awesome. So looking forward to that. Also looking forward to our first guest joining us today, Sam Cosentino, our hockey analyst for Sportsnet, junior hockey expert. Sammy Cos in the hotel room. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year, boys. I see you got rid of the dead weight and moved Sammy into the spot, eh?
Yeah, I'm not liking it. I don't, if I'm being totally honest,
I'm
like
nervous.
I've sat at the desk here before a few times when Kipper's been away or Borny's been away, but I've never sat in Kipper's chair.
Yeah.
And I hate it, but I'm here and we're doing it. So how are you, Sammy? Nice glasses. A couple of Sammys with glasses on today.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Kipper will reclaim that.
No problem. He'll be kicking me out of here pretty quickly, boys. Don't worry.
So, Cos, are you in Ottawa?
I'm in Ottawa. I was there last night. I'm here today, and I'll be there for the two games tomorrow, and there'll be one team in red and white that won't be playing.
Yeah. So let's, instead of doing an overview, just tell us about last night. What were your thoughts on how Canada looked, played last night, and in the way the loss unfolded?
So, Borny, here's the thing that I want to do first. Like, I've been reading a lot. I've been listening a lot, watching. The one thing that nobody has really said, and I haven't seen everything, but I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, let's give the Czechs credit. 15 drafted players. They play a brand of hockey that they're hard, they're heavy to play against, and they have enough skill to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, this isn't just a one-time thing. The exact same thing happened last year. And going back a couple of years ago, it was Canada who had to beat the Czechs to win a gold medal. So this is like, it's not a mirage. It's not something that just happened. Oh, Canada's awful. They lost to the Czechs. Let's give some credit to where the credit is due for what is a really good team and has traditionally produced really good players. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk about where we are with Canada and what happened. So there was a change at the top in terms of the management group. Peter Anholt from the Lethbridge Hurricanes had been there previously. Al Murray, he was a longtime National Hockey League head scout, helped build two championship teams with the Tampa Bay Lightning, comes back to Hockey Canada, which is a place he'd been previously, to be their head scout. And then they go and hire Dave Cameron. And I think there was that slight shift from going back to last year when there was a different management group running. Peter Anholt was still there, and you had a coach in Alatang who'd been an assistant at the World Juniors a couple of years previous, who was a little younger, and you had that dynamic. And so that dynamic didn't work, and I think Hockey Canada wanted to make a shift to a little bit more old school, trusted people who've been around a long time. Dave Cameron, you know, this would be his I think third or fourth or fifth World Juniors if you include his assistant coaching duties. And so that's where it starts for me, Borny, and then we can kind of move along from there.
Yeah, I can't imagine Dave Cameron had a very good night's sleep last night after a way that a lot of the stuff unfolded for him in this tournament.
It wasn't pretty. He's taken a lot of heat today. He's a guy who would wear that just like any other Canadian would, a proud guy who's been on the other side of it in terms of winning a gold medal a couple of years ago and been on the really bad side of it when you get to the gold medal game and lose – when you're leading 3-1 into the third period, 5-3 against the Russians in Buffalo in 2011. So this guy has seen all sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful, wonderful person. And I think some of the criticism It needs to be shared. I will say this. Having Gavin McKenna serve a 5-minute major, I didn't think that I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. I think the move to put McKenna once he was back playing with the top line in the latter stages of the second period and all of the third, when you saw what they produced in the third period, is probably something that should have been done sooner.
Wait, but I do
think there are things along the way that might have been done differently as well. And it starts for me is I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, there's six guys that should have been there. If I look at the group collectively, the one thing that I would have done, because you have those extra roster spots, like Zane Parekh is a guy for me I would have had on the team. I don't think there's anyone who can run a power play in the CHL like Zane Parekh, the 9th overall pick to Calgary last year. He's extremely dynamic. I understand why this group didn't go with him, because he looks a little too laissez-faire. He's a little too casual. There are some defensive issues with him. And when I look at Chris Lazary, his head coach in Saginaw, being on the bench, and they didn't take him, he must have had a lot of votes against him. For me, I would have taken him, even if I had to sit him down and then realize my power play is not that good without him. Matthew Schaefer's out. Okay, come on in. Play your 6-7 minutes. Run the power play for us. If you can earn our trust, then we'll start to play you more 5-on-5, and maybe you become Ryan Ellis of 2009 or 10 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Who was as like the 8th or the 7th or 8th defenseman, just there for the power play, and then worked his way into a top 4 role. So that for me would be one miss personnel-wise that I would be critical of, and I've pretty much said that since day one. But I will say this, guys. I looked at the roster that they brought to the table, and I said, an NHL Network working there last week, that they would win a gold medal. And so maybe I should be criticism too, right?
Sammy, here's the thing that's concerning for me is I talked about this a little bit in our first hour that, you know, regardless if you like the roster or Team Canada, regardless of the roster selection or, you know, this guy's left off or this guy's left off, your B plus A minus team should be good enough to play for a medal, like to go out 2 times. That's what's concerning to me. And, like, I don't know if it's a bigger thing, it's a generation thing, but, like, I am a little bit concerned having 2 straight seasons. Like, I know that's not the biggest sample size, but 2 straight seasons out of the medal play for Team Canada at the World Juniors, I mean, that's unprecedented, and it does give me a little bit of concern in terms of the direction of the program.
And rightly so. I mean, you're right. The B team should have been good enough to be a competitive team in this event with the Latvias and with the Kazakhstans and the Switzerlands and the Germanies and so on. So I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly. Having said that, 10 first-round picks. Then you got McKenna, who's going to be an early first 2 years from now. You got Porter Martone, who's going to be an early first in this year's draft. So essentially, you have 12 first-round picks. You had over 220 goals, I think, minus Rakoff's goals, minus Schaefer's goals, in the lineup last night. There should have been plenty of firepower to, A, run an effective power play, B, be able to score 5-on-5. And so when I get back to the starting point is, you look at the shift in management, you go back to a coach who's been there before, and then you look at the players. I think there's responsibility to be shared from the players, from the bench, right on up through to the top. Mm-hmm. And so you can't sit there as a player and say, oh, well, I didn't like the coach. I didn't like his decisions. I didn't like my utilization, so on and so forth. You still have to take some responsibility. And, you know, there was some of that going on last night, but probably not enough for my liking. But honestly, that responsibility needs to be shared from the players' bench right on up through to the top of the management, which Scott Salmon, Peter Anhold, and Al Murray did today.
So, Sam, it seems like it was bad enough to ask the question, where's the reckoning coming? Because, you know, I've heard criticism of the coaching, like, why didn't they practice is something that's come up a number of times. I've heard criticism of the, you know, who they took, why didn't they take, you know, these 5 or 6 players. So you don't lose like this, lose 3 of 5 games in a tournament, and everyone goes, we'll get them next year. You know, where's the reckoning?
Where is the reckoning? So I think there's 9 or 10 guys that have potential to come back. Mm-hmm. And this was a younger team, make no mistake about it. Like some of the guys that we were talking about being left off the roster are 06 players, only drafted last year, 18-year-old players. The common theme that this is a 19-year-old tournament really rings true. Like I look at Ryan Leonard for the U.S. Oh, this guy is an absolute animal. Yeah. He takes punches in the face, kick to the face, broken nose, talking to him yesterday. And at the very end, when he had a chance really to do something bad and maybe get suspended, he skated away, went to his bench. Like, that's a 19-year-old mentality. At 18, you snap, you whack, you do whatever you do. You probably take a suspension. You're out for the semifinal game. Like, that's what a 19-year-old mentality does to you. It's the learning that goes along with that. So I look at the 06 group, the 9 or 10 guys that are coming back next year. I look at McKenna as a guy who can come back, Mortone, Schaefer. I don't think they realized the impact this guy was going to have, but he was literally their number one defenseman.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is unbelievable. I've watched him grow this year, the two prospect games in November. He was the best player on the ice.
Is he your number one, Sam?
On the ice. So Books has him at one. In my last ranking, I didn't. I'll probably put him there this time, just as much for his absence, Borny, as for when I watched him play.
Really?
Because you realize the impact he had absent in the lineup for Canada. This guy's unbelievable. So the reckoning, Borny, comes in that you have a number of returning players. I think they're not going to come back with the same coaching staff. Chris Millett is a guy in Kelowna who's had some success with the under 18. So he's a guy who's familiar with the 06 group. He's probably a guy who should be in serious consideration for the head coaching job. A little bit younger than Dave, a little more connected in terms of, you know, just the age group, and a guy who's worked in a great program in Kelowna. So he'd be, you know, if I had to say it right now, he'd be a choice. Gardner McDougall out in Moncton has had a lot of success in a lot of different areas. He's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's a guy who wins. He probably should garner some consideration. So it'll be interesting to see. But to get back to answering your question, Borny, I think the reckoning comes in the fact that you're going to return the same number of players basically as the U.S. returned this year. And you'd hope that learning experience would carry forward. From a player perspective, you'd like to think it would be taken care of. And now management and the coaching staff has to, you know, would have to fall in the line to do its part after that.
Yeah, you mentioned the USA, Sammy, and, you know, watching that team play, it's like, that's what we used to look like. You know, that's the killer instinct. It's the size, it's the shots, it's the physicality. It's just the dog, for lack of a better term. And it's just their program in the last 10 years has just taken off. And as a Canadian hockey fan, clearly our biggest rival, it's very worrisome to see how good they look. Like you said, that Ryan Leonard, he is just a dog on a bone. That goal he scored against Switzerland, takes a puck across the net, top corner. Like, he's an excellent player, and he just kind of exemplifies what that program is. It terrifies me how good they are.
He's totally like Gabe Perreault. James Higgins is going to be 1, 2, or 3.
That Yzerman just fires it. They all shoot it like Matthews.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, the interesting element to all that is it kind of tips back to the CHL-NCAA equation. This U.S. under-18 program that's really been successful and basically the starting point to get to the under-20 program and where it is might end up taking some hits because of this, because that was a choice. You know, there's a William Moore who plays there now, played his hockey in the greater Toronto area, his minor hockey growing up, a dual citizen, decided to go play for the U.S. under-18 program. That's the type of guy who now probably stays and plays in the CHL. And some of those other U.S.-born players who are saying, well, it's kind of cool to play in the program because we have an international flavor. We play in the USHL. We play against college. Well, how about we just go play 60, add your playoffs, 75 games in the CHL and just keep building games. Type of thing. So that program may look a little bit different, Sammy, but it really is the impetus for what we're seeing resulting in a gold medal last year for the U.S. And I would have to say the favorites, you know, going into this weekend here.
Be hard to bet against them. So I want to zoom in on Cowan here a little bit, because Easton Cowan has clearly taken a pretty bad beating over the last 24 hours in terms of the performance on this tournament, being a high profile Leaf pick in a country where, you know, they're not the most popular team. I mean, what did you make of his tournament? What do you make of him as a prospect after that? And, like, just your general thoughts on Cowan after what was a really disappointing few days here.
Spoken like a true Owen Sound attack.
I'm just devastated to see the London Knights struggle so much this tournament. It just broke my little heart.
Yeah. So listen, I followed the London Knights for a long time, and they've always had a program where their best players play a ton. And that includes 2 minutes in the power play. And,
yep.
5 minutes and a 5 minute power play.
Yeah, Sammy, I know. I had to watch Corey Perry shoot four in when they're up 11-4 against a woeful attack, and he's playing 2 minutes on the power play. I had to watch it. Don't you
Let
worry.
It go.
No, never.
You've seen that movie.
Yes.
So now you're taking these players and Sam Dickinson and Oliver Bonk, and now you're putting them into a program where you've just played your 40 games and your 2 years previous to being that guy.
Yeah.
Now you're asked shorter shifts. If you don't get it done, get off the ice. But we need you to work in bursts. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw with Easton, and Books was pointing this out to me, is like, you got to take a look at his shift lengths. They're longer. They're 10 to 15 seconds longer than the rest of his group. That kind of messes with the entire chemistry and the flow of things, right, for everybody else. And yes, you are taking that responsibility on yourself. You want to do more. You want to be the guy who is the hero. But actually, doing less is doing more, because you're rotating through your group better. You now can focus your energy on those short bursts and go out and do what you do best, get to the net front, drive the net, shoot the puck, and those sorts of things. And I think Easton got away from that. And part of that were the habits built in from playing in a London Knights program that gives you a lot of freedom to do those things. And part of that, as an older player, 19-year-old player, Easton has to take upon himself to realize, hey, man, I got to get with the program here, and I have to understand, I have to do all of that same great work that I do in London, but just do it in a shorter time frame. And that's not something that really happened throughout the course of the event. You know, Sam Dickinson, he had a tough night too.
Yeah.
You know, he was bobble pucks
around in the net. That's tough.
That was a brutal bounce, though.
Just like you just man, puts it on that one if you're him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the one at the end of the first period where knowing where you are in the clock and that puck over at the opposition blue line, like, that's not a play that you can make. But he's an 18-year-old guy drafted last year. That experience, he won't make that mistake next year, right? So, again, there are a lot of different things. When it comes to Callan and his long-term projection as a Leaf project, he's still a very good player. What his ceiling is, I mean, is he a top six guy? He's probably right on that edge. But he works extremely hard. He's really talented. He can play with skilled players. He is good enough with his stick work and his strength to be able to check, and that will continue to get better. I have no concerns about him for his long-term projection as a Maple Leafs project. Is he a surefire top six? I think that's something that only Easton is going to be able to create. And again, if you're looking at being in the top six for the Toronto Maple Leafs for the next 3, 4, 5 years, well, there's three guys immediately you got to beat out. So there's basically three spots.
Tough spot to crack.
And Marner, are you better than those guys? Does Marner leave? What happens with Tavares? So on and so forth. So, again, I like the long-term prognosis for what Easton Callan can be for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That hasn't changed. I didn't think he had the best tournament. I think there's going to be some great reflection for him moving forward here. And we'll see how it works out for him. But he'll probably go back and score in another 30 straight games.
Yeah. Gazi, do you think there's still such a thing as a Canadian style of hockey? And I ask this because McKee has brought it up before, where, you know, you used to think of our identity as Canadian hockey was guys like Pronger or Lindros or even Mark Messier, you know, skill, toughness, sort of that element. And, you know, when I look at international hockey, everyone kind of, the game has been boiled down to there is a little bit of everything, right? Everyone kind of plays the same. It's like MMA. I was saying the other day, used to be UFC would fight a sumo wrestler would fight a boxer. And then everyone realized, okay, it's the best if you have a little of all these different skills. Everyone kind of plays the same. So is there still a Canadian style of hockey?
So when I think of that, I think of the Brent Sutter coach teams back in the mid-2000s, where they'd come out and throw 10 hits in the first 5 minutes and automatically everyone's engaged and that's the way they're going. The game has changed. Like, it doesn't really work that way anymore. So what I think, this team was built to me along the similar lines of the Four Nations team. You know, we talked about Tom Wilson a lot. Well, do you really need Tom Wilson in a short event like that? Is he going to go out and is he going to intimidate people? Yeah, maybe. Is he still going to be able to do some of the other skilled things? Probably, but we might be able to find a better skilled two-way guy who can do all those things for a short tournament. And so I think this team was built sort of along that premise. A lot of good two-way guys who are higher compete guys who are a little bit more responsible. And we've seen this shift, Borny. Like, you go back to 2014, Mike Babcock in charge. We're going to go all skill and let the skill sort itself out lines 1 through 4. Oh, wait a sec. Previous to that, it was a clear fire top six and a clear fire bottom six. Yeah. And the bottom six is going to check the pants off you, and the top six is going to outscore you, and we're going to have a good goalie. Well, that's not really how it is anymore either. So now we're in that mode. We're just going to get a whole bunch of two-way players and see that we're going to be a really good defensive team, and we're going to be able to score goals. And I think proven at this level this year, that's probably not the way you can go about your business. You go take all the best skilled guys and allow the skilled guys to sort themselves out. And if you look at Stanley Cups, what are we seeing, guys? Third lines, fourth lines having an impact. Go back to that great team, you know, Nick Paul gets acquired, and you think about that fourth line with Tampa when they were winning cups. You think about Vegas and how they were able to play four lines. I think that's the way the game's gone. It's four lines of skill. Yes, you want to have some grit and some bite in there. If you can find the unicorn like Tom Wilson, that's a fantastic element to have, but that's not the necessary element that used to be required to go and win international play.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about a little bit last night in Leafs Talk, but my favorite international hockey line of all time was from the 2010 Olympics when they had their quote-unquote checking line of Rick Nash, Jonathan Toews, and Mike Richards. And it's just like, these three right. guys are their...
Richards
maybe their,
was fringe at the time, fringe, I remember being... Fringe,
but like, he was like one of the best... I think he was on the Flyers. He was one of the best players in the Flyers at the time, but he had that sort of skill. But then you had Rick Nash and Toews. And you just think of... I don't worry about Canada having the top guys. Like, I always am, like, I mean, look at Gavin McKenna. I look at Schaefer. I'm like, yeah, these two guys are bona fide studs. They're going to be contributing to our men's senior national team for 10 years after they go in the NHL. I'm not worried about that. It's just the waves of guys and like what lines underneath is what I'm a little bit more concerned about. That was what I would be on it.
I agree. But having said that, there's enough talent to be able to fill all of those spots, your 13 forwards, your 7D. Yeah. And by the way, now in the World Juniors, you got that little bullpen, those three extra guys you can bring. So if you need to bring specialists, mm-hmm. there's room for that. If you need to bring some bite and some intimidation into the lineup because the U.S. is playing big and heavy and they're running around, well, we'll bring that guy. Yeah. We have an opportunity to bring that guy. If we need a power play specialist, we have the opportunity to bring that guy and sit him in the bullpen and use him, you know, when required. So I think the way to go about it is you take your best skilled guys and you mm-hmm. let themselves sort it out and let that internal competition between Crosby and McKinnon and McDavid. Yeah. All right, boys, here's one puck. Go get it. Who's going to win that puck?
Yeah. I think
it would be great to watch and great to sort out. Right.
I do think the World Juniors and just sort of watching it, my stakes were higher in it this year because of now knowing that, we've entered into the best on best.
We're back,
of hockey, where, you know, we for 10 years, well, I guess the 2016 where they had like, where Canada beat Team Europe in the final.
Not
or whatever.
Real.
Like, sure, that was best on best. But like, it's been since 2014, it's been a full 10 years since we've had like an Olympic or a best on best. And it's been a real commitment to start it. And now I'm starting to feel the stakes where it's like, you know, McDavid's not old. McKinnon's not old.
But
like in 4 years after the next Olympic, it's like
you need Celebrini to get real good.
Like it's and that's why I felt like the stakes were so much higher. And now I'm going into this Four Nations face-off, which, you know, it's a fake made-up event, but like it's the best USA and Canada are gonna be playing in a high-stakes game. It's like the stakes are really higher for me after watching what happened at this. Like, I need Canada to be really good. Like, I can't have them be bad at this level and then not succeed at the senior net level. Like, I'm in shambles if that happens.
Well, you know what, Sammy? Like, if you think about it, right? You know, Elliot's talked on 32 Thoughts a lot about the extension of the CBA. And the CBA for sure is going to include some sort of international play, most likely the Olympics, and some other iteation of
it. And rightfully so. That's the way it should. It's crazy how long we went without it.
Oh, it's crazy. But the Matthew Schaefers, the Connor Bedards, the Gavin McKennas, like, not today, not tomorrow, but 4 or 5 years from now, oh my gosh, you're darn right, you're going to need those guys. So it does start here. Mm-hmm. And it does start with, you know, the experience of putting together a good team and playing a team game and understanding roles and doing all of those things at this level so that when you get asked to go play in those big events, you're accustomed to it. And so I agree wholeheartedly. Like, this isn't just a one and done, we're never going to see McKenna again or we're never going to see Schaefer again. Like, you're right. We're going to see these guys in the international stage for a long, long time to come.
Last one, just quickly about McKenna. I really like the look of this kid. And, you know, I think he had a lot of flashes of brilliance and maybe a little bit underutilized. But how good is he? Like, is he in the McDavid conversation, a step below that? Like, where in generational is this guy for you? Because I was really impressed with what I saw from him.
He's not Matthews. He's not McDavid. He's not McKinnon.
Yeah.
But Bedard, and I know he's having an off year with 33 points in his 38 games.
Yeah.
But he reminds me a lot of that because his ability to shoot the puck, release it really quickly with accuracy, with hardness, but also like the sneaky playmaking ability.
Yeah.
So he looks a lot like Bedard in that fashion for me, in that he's kind of a dual threat, but he'll probably, like, you look at his, I think he's got 19 goals and 41 assists for Medicine Hat right now. But those numbers for me could easily be the other way.
Yeah.
41-18 guy. I do think he's a dual threat type of guy, and he'll probably make his mark and his calling card a little bit more on the playmaking side, but you can't sleep on his goal scoring ability. So I'm looking at more of a Bedard type with not quite as high end scoring ability.
All right.
And last one for me, Causey, we appreciate your time today. Just, I know you're always evaluating your rankings and where you have guys. Is there anyone who has stood out on a stock up, stock down, not just from Team Canada, but while you're sitting, you know, watching that tournament in person, have you changed, revised an opinion on any players since you've been there?
Well, Schaefer's absence, one for me.
Yeah.
Porter Martone, I think he's the real deal. I know he was dealing with some groin issues that hasn't gotten talked about a lot, but you can see there's a lot there from a power forward perspective. There's one kid by the name of William Eklund who plays in Sweden, who I went to watch him a little bit yesterday. A little bit of a smaller guy. His brother plays in San Jose with Salabrini. He's really, really impressive. He's got his head in the swivel. He's always looking for open ice. He's got a lightning quick release. He digs pucks out of corners. He wins battles against bigger opponents. So he's a guy for me, like I have him in the top 10, but he's probably a little bit of a riser. And I think the other thing for me is James Hagans. He confirms to me he belongs in the top three. Where he fits in that group, I'm not sure. It's probably one or two, but man, is he ever smart. Is he skilled? He skates. He's got details in his game. He adapts his game to those he plays with and the level he plays at. So he's been really, really impressive and confirmed a lot of things I already thought about James.
What can we expect from you? When will there be your next ranking list? What's on deck?
Yeah, so we'll get back home. We'll get the Wednesday night show coming up next week. And then the Ontario Hockey League's having a prospects game. I'm going to wait until after that game to put out the latest list. But Schaefer, Martone, Misa, and Hagans, you'll see those guys in the top four for sure. So it'll probably be the 22nd, Borny.
All right, Sammy. We'll keep an eye out for that. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, bud.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great chatting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you too, bud. Thanks a lot. That's Sam Cosentino, hockey analyst here at Sportsnet. Good to have a good Canada vent sesh.
Yeah.
Get it off your chest a little
bit. It is. And like, I just, like we talked about it there, I just find that these games just meant so much more to me now that I know that we're entering in.
I feel what you're feeling because you almost forget what it felt like when Canada was in the gold medal games in 2012.
There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Like, if I had to choose between like a Leafs cup and like gold medal forever for like, I'm clearly going to take Leafs. Like I understand, yeah. But like, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I was so upset during that USA game.
Yeah.
When they're just shooting holes in the net, like just off the post, like they're just firing it. Yeah. They're yelling at the Canada, way to go, cowboy. Like, I'm like, I have to turn this off. I am so upset by this.
Yeah.
And we are a month away from the senior men's national level of this exact experience.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we still have a really good team. And it's like, it's not a crisis in Hockey Canada. Like, it's not a crisis right now in terms of who we have. Like, you look at our roster, and I don't think you can love a roster more than what we have right now, what we're going to be sending to Montreal and Boston.
No idea.
I think that's where it is.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about that, but like, it's starting to get a little bit scary.
It is. It is. I said 2012. I think 2014 was the last gold medal game, was it not?
Yes. And they beat Sweden in the final, and it was when Nicholas Backstrom got dinged, I think the day of or the morning of, that he was like on some weird, it wasn't even like juice, but it was like so he couldn't play in the game. We beat him 3-0. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
But the game before that, they beat USA.
The 2002 game?
No, in that tournament in 2014, the most boring hockey tournament of all time, where Mike Babcock's like, no chances.
Yeah.
We're just going to have the puck the entire time. They beat USA 1-0 in the semifinal game. Jamie Benn tip off of him, Corey Perry pass, I think, into the middle.
I'm glad we have your photographic hockey memory.
It was the most dominant 1-0 game of all time.
Yes.
But like, some of my formative moments And like most important things to me that I look back on a sports fan, and a lot of it has to do with being with a Leaf fan because they haven't given me a lot.
Right.
But it's been these big Hockey Canada moments.
Golden goal.
Golden goal.
To me, the Lemieux dummy through the legs.
2002
is, like...
is always more important than 2010. And that's a, maybe not an unpopular opinion. Like the singular moment of having the overtime winner, yeah. Vancouver set the gold medals record in Canada, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But like after 50 years, Lemieux, the sort of turbulence that Gretzky went through where he was like, he ran that team and he was taking a beating for it. Yeah. Like, it's a crock of crap.
Came
and him like
spoke,
in front of
yeah,
the
yeah,
like
yeah.
the whole stuff. Like that was such a formative time for me and such hit me at the perfect age.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like Hockey Canada and this sort of best on best, it's ridiculous how long we've gone without it.
So you're going to be excited, nervous, all that. And how are you going to feel when Austin Matthews tweaks his back in the semifinal against Canada, can't play the second and third period?
Probably not the best.
Not the best still.
I would... It's funny, you know, we don't want to talk about the Leafs too much in the national show, but like, he definitely really wants to go.
You know,
like,
I was thinking
his first chance.
It's his first chance.
Yeah.
He's also not just American. They're a proud, patriotic family.
Yes,
like his family very.
He's a
USA.
Extremely American.
Yes.
And he wants to play for America, and like I'm sure he's got all the relationships with all the guys there, and he's been looking forward to it a lot.
Part of the program, right?
Yeah, he wants to. He really wants to do it. So, game time.
Game time.
All right, it's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app, play the odds, and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Just doing it all today, hosting, producing.
Yeah.
holy smokes,
you're multi-talented.
Few games on the ice tonight. Ottawa Senators. Back in action on the second half of back-to-back after their captain called them embarrassing last
night. And they weren't. I thought that was really harsh. They had a couple of nice goals, playing a pretty good team on the road. I didn't think it was that bad.
Listen, buddy, it's a new standard in Ottawa.
I guess.
You know, it's like they they're trying to win here now. They are minus 105 in St. Louis. Not a bad spot for me for the Ottawa Senators. They feel like they're kind of actually a good team now.
Yeah.
St. Louis Blues have been decent recently,
well,
too.
Well, yeah, the Montgomery Blues are okay. And the addition to Cam Flower, I kind of wonder if the Winter Classic will be a turning point for them. Like, you don't trade for Cam Fowler and go, we're tanking. Like, they're trying to win hockey games. They're a real team.
And it was fascinating when we had Doug Armstrong on our show, however long ago that was, and he was like, yeah, we're just, you know, like, we're trying to get a bunch of guys that are this age. Which is kind of weird with Fowler because he's not in that group. He's a little bit older, but they always just seem to figure out these defensemen that they bring in there.
He's one of the guys. I love the idea that they didn't just tank out. They got five first-round picks coming, and they're being competitive while they wait for these guys. And I love the idea that they're trying to set a culture of we're trying to win. We're not the Blackhawks.
So the other Canadian team, a couple other Canadian teams in action tonight. This one, to me, jumps off the page. The Nashville Predators are in Vancouver to take on the Vancouver Canucks on the second half of back-to-back, obviously, for the Vancouver Canucks, who lost Thatcher Demko last night to...
Also back spasm, speaking
weird,
of Matthews.
Not... Look, he's goalie Matthews, by the way. Like, in terms of, like, you have no idea what's going on with his injuries.
Yeah.
Like, you're terrified every game. The Vancouver Canucks are plus 165 on home ice against the Nashville Predators.
It's not that the Canucks are plus 165. It's that the Canucks minus Pettersson, minus Hughes, minus Demko, minus Roenick.
I understand all this, but Nashville is horrendous.
Bad. Team on
and
the road.
It's like, I guess Vancouver's not very good at home. I guess that number is kind of correct, but that does jump off the page to me.
Bucks don't miss a trick.
And the last thing I'll bring up, the red-hot Montreal Canadiens in Chicago tonight to take on the Blackhawks. Montreal Canadiens, like, actually kind of sniffing around.
But they're 500.
They're
3 points back of a playoff spot.
And they are minus 140 tonight in Chicago to take on the woeful Blackhawks. Holy crap, that Winter Classic.
Yeah.
Like, that is...
They got some public scolding from their GM, and they're embarrassed.
Hey, here's an idea.
Try to win games?
Don't put bad teams in a big event. Like, what did you expect? Like, I know you're trying to get Bedard in there, but just, like, wait until they're half decent?
I will say, the NHL... made their bed and was like, we don't lay in that. It's like, you go lay there.
Yeah, it's like, both these teams aren't great.
Everyone's going to watch that team stink and be bad for 60 minutes.
Like, it wasn't even close.
No.
They got run off out of the rink.
A pretty good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fed it to them. So,
And that's it. So that's all I'm bringing up for the Canadian teams. And that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only.
please play responsibly.
All right. This is a reminder to text us at 590-590. Sammy and I are going to take some of those and answer some questions after the break. We might talk a little bit about the Avalanche and their insanity.
Text. 590-590-590, text.
And we will see you in a few minutes after these messages.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Real Kipper and Bourne. One of my favorite things is text arguing with David Amber. He's saying the last best on best is World Cup of Hockey 2016.
You're right. He's right.
But I'm saying he's not right. It's not best on best when some of your best play for a different team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, actually.
Connor McDavid's not on Canada. It's not our best.
You want to hear something really dark that I was watching today?
Uh-oh.
I was watching clips of that. It came up on my like TikTok algorithm. It's like, North America was amazing. And I'm watching Matthews, and I'm like, boy, he's skating well. Didn't look like that this year.
No.
It's like, that was a long time ago. Well, he's a young man.
He was probably 185 pounds at that point or something.
Flying. McDavid and him on the same line. They're going down the ice. They're going totally, like, skating the same speed. I'm like, geez.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Now he's a tank now.
Yeah.
This hour of Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365, who we're very grateful for. One of the fascinating things last night is watching the Colorado Avalanche down a couple of goals to the Buffalo Sabres. They end up winning a thrilling hockey game. Kel McCarr, freak.
Yeah, that goal was ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
He's amazing.
And then Taves with the OT winner. Mm-hmm. But what really stood out was there was a strange goal. Zach Benson on Buffalo, kind of, you know, he's tiny. He's young. He's 19.
Eligible for Team Canada, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was Celebrini and Bernard.
And so, like, he's got a little bit of, like, pestiness to him. So he got taken into Mackenzie Blackwood and fell on him. He's on my watch list of guys who are accidentally on purpose guys.
Oh, interesting. I like that. Okay. Yeah.
So, anyway, he gets taken and he falls on Blackwood's ankle. And he goes down. Blackwood's rolling around, like, in his net, looking up at the rafters.
Writhing in pain.
Writhing. And the ref will not blow it dead. Puck's in the corner. There's no reason they can't. And then Buffalo grabs the puck. Benson grabs it. Was it not Benson again?
Yes, it was Benson.
Comes around. The ref gets out of his way, stands on the back of the net. Benson tucks it into the net, and it counts.
Yeah. So a couple things on this. Benson, you mentioned about having that weird little, you know, competitiveness, kind of gritty. He does, like, a celly like they won game seven of a playoff
Pumped
series.
It out.
Like, it's like the goalie's literally lying on the ice in pain because of what you did. And immediately someone came over to him.
They tried to fight him,
Immediately tried to fight him, and I would have done the same thing. It would have pissed me off so much.
They're like, the commentator's like, Benson's trying to get at Sam Gerard. It's like, no, he isn't.
So it's a weird one for me because you obviously should have blown it dead.
Colorado had the puck somewhere in that corner.
So let's, Andrew, I think we had the clip of Bednar talking about this, and I'm pretty sure I beeped it. So let's play it. Let's play this here.
The referee said it wasn't blown because we put their guy into Scott. I said, I don't give a He's hurt. They're standing there. He's sitting there. He's hurt. Blow the whistle. If the puck's in the net front still and they were hacking away at it and it goes in, I'd say fine. But as soon as the puck squirts to the corner, they got to blow it dead. They do it all the time for regular players because of player safety. The rule would state that we have to touch it, but they don't follow that rule. They never follow that rule.
So I cut that at however long that was. He literally went on for 3 minutes.
It's an 11-minute presser, I think.
He was going off on this.
Yeah.
And I honestly think rightfully so, because he's right. I think you have to touch it. Like, I think that is sort of – but it's one of the most unwritten rules. Like, you have the goaltender lying in his own net, writhing in pain. That's just an obvious blow it down.
Yeah, and safety is the best point. And
like,
they
what
do.
Happened with McCabe?
They do when, blow it down.
When did McCabe get bonked in the head? Like, remember they took the slap shot off the head and then he missed, what, 4 or 5 games?
Yeah.
On that situation, they immediately blew
it
down.
Oh, that's bad. Like, and everyone goes, of course,
blow it down. Yeah. Like, and it happens all the time. They didn't have to do it for Oliver Ekman-Larsson when he got hit in the knee last night and he was hobbling around a little bit. If you can stand up, I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was one of the stranger ones to me. And Bednar, who is one of the more sort of dry, understated coaches.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed listening to him talk to it. Like, I really wish we just played the whole thing. Like, it was amazing.
Honestly, though, Bednar seems like he just, like, is on ketamine or something. Yes. He's like, do you have no emotions? But he was fired up about that. So that's much must-watch stuff. So we do have other clips and stuff, but I think we should get to some texts if we
I'm got just, them. I'm,
While you're trying to produce and host at the same okay. time.
Let's see here. Okay, this is more about a it's not very good. Rumors of Taves to the Jets is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Taves replacing Nemestikov on the second line could be a huge boost for the Jets.
By the way, this is Jonathan Taves.
Even at 80% level of 2022, Taves would be a big step up from Nemestikov. Ehlers is having a great season, but he would need a better center to play with.
So if this you missed our first
this
hour.
This jumped out to me. Because, so tee it up.
If you miss our first hour, there's a recent quote from Jonathan Taves. That Jonathan Taves. Taves, who apparently in GQ, who said that he would be open to considering a return to the NHL. He's been on a healing journey. I know he recently tweeted out, he went to India for some time trying to get better.
Yeah.
And now seems better enough that he wants to try to return. So Frank Saravalli, mm-hmm. hearing that this morning on his show, mentioned that three interested parties might be the Leafs, the Winnipeg Jets, where he's from, and the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah. I think we need to pump the absolute brakes here.
You do.
The second line of the Winnipeg. They're the best team.
First place team.
I appreciate you texting.
Yeah.
But they're the best team in the league. Like, they're not, you know, like, Nemestikov, sure, but, like, Nemestikov right now versus a guy that hasn't played hockey in literally since the year 2022.
Yeah.
Just, it's a really, really exciting name.
Yeah.
Jonathan Taves is a guy that's, like, one of the best players of this generation.
Yeah.
Multiple cups, gold medals, all the stuff. We know the resume with him. NHL is a pretty quick league.
Yes.
Fast league. Just pump the brakes with this.
But here's the thing with Jonathan Taves.
Okay.
Nobody in the NHL or in the last 10 years more than him, some guys as much as him, maybe Bergeron, Kopitar, whatever, no one knows where to be more than him.
This is fair. 100% fair.
It's like, you know, Mike Babcock used to say, he knows where to stand. Like, you know, and this guy knows where to be and has a conscience. So even if he's not as fast or he's not as dynamic, you can count on him defensively to make the right decisions and then build. And so could a team, maybe it's the Jets on their fourth line for cheap. I don't think it's the Leafs. He's not going to come try to,
too high profile.
You know, rejuvenate a career under this spotlight.
And it goes bad here, and it's like he totally barbecues his, like, reputation. Like, it's not a good thing.
No,
here.
Colorado maybe, though. I can see that, too. Yeah. Chance to win a cup, chance to be competitive. But he's a fascinating name. He has to be on a roster by March 7th to be eligible to participate in the playoffs. So
okay.
I could see the Jets. The Jets makes so much sense. He's a Manitoba boy.
Yeah. Well, we've gone an hour and 46 minutes without mentioning the Vancouver Canucks, and that's about to end now.
Which is insanity and poor hosting.
In your opinion, who is easier to replace in Vancouver, Miller or Petey? Understanding that it's difficult to replace either for what they bring. In my opinion, Petey, but curious on your thoughts, Jason B. from Vancouver. Thanks, Jason. Your thoughts, Bernie.
Well, I think it fundamentally depends on whether you believe that someone of Elias Pettersson's skill set can become a different style. Like, can he take on a mentality different than the one he has?
Yeah.
Because he is the more talented elite athlete. He can do things few people can do. He's Willie Nylander.
Yeah.
But we love guys like Brady Tkachuk. He's not?
No.
He's better, not as good.
I don't think he's as good as Willie Nylander.
All right.
On his best day, Willie Nylander is better than Pettersson. I think it's close, but I think Pettersson.
But that mentality, Willie is never.
Sorry, Vancouver. I know you.
Willie is never going to have Nathan McKinnon's absolute passion, hit you with a helmet and eat chickpea pasta. He's never going to have it.
Throw donuts out of the media room.
He's always
going to
be Willie. Willie's going to be Willie until his career ends and then after his career. So I might say Miller's tough to replace. Because he's a 100-point guy at his best, too, except he's a competitive psychopath.
Yeah.
Which you kind of have to be to win.
Yeah. It's funny.
And he's cheaper.
He's cheaper. I'm really concerned from what I've seen from Pettersson.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first few years, like, when he was really going, I was like, oh, my God. This guy is undeniable.
He's Pavel Datsyuk.
Like, he's the two-way stud.
But he can also hit, and he's got that
the reverse
shot.
Hit, and he seemed a little – and it just has gone away. And pretty much – and the terrifying thing is pretty much since, like, the day he signed that contract, it's never really been the same.
Right.
Which is terrifying. And I think most people listening to Vancouver would agree with me, but people still seem to side with him there. JT Miller, I almost equate him to, I don't know, a type of like a Gallant type coach or like a, maybe a Laviolette.
He wears thin after a while.
You send him into a new room and it's like, he fires everybody up and like, he scores a bunch and he's red hot.
Yeah.
And then it's like after 2 years of like, it's, oh,
he's
my
still doing
God.
It. I can't do this.
So like maybe once, because look how good Pettersson was immediately when, JT Miller had his leave. Mm-hmm. I think he had like 12 points in 7 games and then like went pointless the second he came back. Maybe you unlock Pettersson and then it's like, if you trade Miller, but if you trade Pettersson, he goes in. There's more risk, I think, in trading Pettersson than there is in trading JT Miller.
Yeah.
That's how I would, but I think it's harder to replace the competitiveness of JT Miller.
Yeah. Pettersson's just a different dude. And you remember like the heat that Dougie Hamilton got because he liked to go to a museum. Yeah. I know that was kind of, but like, you know, people overblew that specific thing, but he did kind of, he's a different guy a little bit, and Pettersson is that, and I don't know, tough to replace the elite talents, but you sure like the more passionate guys.
Boys, do you really believe that those two kneeing penalties in Canada were penalties
from Nameless Texter? I love this. So I was working the Leafs game. I wasn't all eyes on this. I did see both hits.
Yeah.
When you charge directly at someone, you take a real risk.
You do.
You know, when they sidestep and get out of that lane and you don't want to embarrass yourself and you're kind of making sure I get as much of this guy as I can, you extend pieces of your body forward to hit them before it gets bad, before he's too far out of the lane that you clip him. No one got clipped, so I didn't think there was anything that should have been a major, but I think they're both penalties.
Agree. That's where I stand. I thought the first one, when my first reaction, I thought it was a major. I thought they maybe made the right call. Mm. But now that I've seen more replays, it's just so fast.
Yeah.
It's just so fast. And the second one, it was Gibson. It's like, I don't know if we need to be going 07 FNUF in the last 2 minutes of a hockey game.
Yeah.
It's like, you can stick check them there.
Yep.
Like, you're in good position. You don't need to go in there and try to, like, listen, I like them throwing the weight around, but pick your spots a little bit.
Everyone's amped up and wants to kill the guy.
Yes,
and
I get it.
There's not a coach or a skills instructor who will say, how do you take care of this guy defensively? Go right at him. Like, no, it's all angles and stick position. And you look at some of these great defensive players, none of it is charge at a guy in the neutral zone. And yeah, they paid a price. The penalties thing were just,
I mean, it falls on the coaching staff.
At the end of the day, it does.
Like, you can't take 11 penalties in one game.
No.
When's the last time a hockey team took 11 penalties in a game? That's a full period of hockey in the box.
The intensity and the pressure became so evident with that.
Yes.
It showed itself in that the guys
100%.
You know, weren't calm and within themselves, and it was all this straight line.
Yeah, they were just trying to do too much. Okay, this is a self-serving text, so I'm going to do it anyway. This is for my boy Jeremy in Meaford, longtime texter.
Yes, sir.
Bought my sister, brother-in-law, niece, and nephew all tickets to the Attack game next Wednesday. Forgot about the juniors when I bought them and was bummed that we wouldn't see Carter George in net.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see him after all, Jeremy. So there you go.
Yeah.
And I just quickly wanted to give a shout-out to Carter George, my hometown Attack starting goalie. Thought he was very good in the tournament. Didn't think he was a reason they lost.
Yeah.
And I hope he's holding his head high because it's hard being the goalie for Team Canada.
You know,
horribly hard. So here you go, Carter.
When you're a young kid watching a junior hockey team, the connection you form with these guys is insane. And you know what stood out to me today is Sammy Cause talking about Chris Millett. You know, he's a coach of the Kelowna Rockets. He played for the Rockets when I was a young boy.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up skating instructors at the Okanagan Hockey School together. But when I was a kid, the Rockets were tough, and they fought.
Yeah.
And they had Todd Fedoruk and Chris Millett. Used to
Todd
take his bucket
Fedoruk.
Up. Oh, yeah. No, buddy, these Kelowna teams, you know, five-hour games. But Millett used to take his helmet off, spin it, and he had this long black hair and do the big throwback before his fights.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, to
coolest guy on earth.
Just the literally
number
the,
one coolest
James
guy.
Dean of my era level cool. And so for me, watching him now, you know, have like an adult career.
Yeah.
It's, well, not career. I mean, he's, you know, tracking to be an NHL coach one day. So really happy for him and the Kelowna Rockets. Great program there.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. Really cool stuff.
Did you see that? I know the Islanders guy, quickly before you go, I saw there was I forget the reporter. I don't have it in front of me.
Stephen Rossner?
Yes. Reporting that the Canucks are really interested in Dobson. And there was like the trade. Was it the Pedersen and Dobson, Cizikas, and
the first Engvall. Name, if I'm a Canucks fan, the first, you know, hypothetical trade that came up that would make me go, sorry, what? I'll listen to that one. Is a 24-year-old right-hand top pair guy in Noah Dobson.
Yeah, how would you like Hughes and Dobson on your blue line for the next 10
Hughes,
years?
Hughes, Dobson, Hronek, like you're building something really good there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to take Pierre Engvall, though. No. Isles are not. But as someone who follows the Isles, I'm like, you can't trade the good guys.
No, it's like, that's keep the last good guy you should be trading. Yeah.
Get rid of Engvall and the rest of the crew. all right. Well, that's all we got for today. Sammy, what do you got going on this weekend?
Busy weekend. Leafs back-to-back. Hey, I'm taking the national spotlight here. Subscribe to Leafs Talk.
Yes.
Me and JD at their every show. Grinding on the weekend. Back-to-back. Let's go here. Subscribe. Watch.
It's really good. And I'll be there in playoffs, too. Big thanks to Sam Cause for joining us. Thanks to JD Bunkus. Subscribe to the JD Bunkus podcast as well. JD Bunkus podcast. And this has been Real Kipper and Bourne. We'll see you Monday.